The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Thanks for listening to the Town Hall Review with Hugh Hewitt podcast, bringing to you the best voices on the stories and issues that matter. Here's another piece I'll trust you enjoy. It's hard to imagine, but there's a point where they're going to convert Democrats into Trump voters, Dan. And they're getting very close to that point. I didn't think it would be possible. I thought it would be a turnout election and that, you know, base against base 2004 all over again. But this is unprecedented. And I want to ask you, you're a smart guy, and you ran the Coalition Provisional Authority. Did we drop supplies into Mosul when we were pounding? You're the spokesperson for the head of the Provisional Authority. Did we drop supplies into Mosul? Did we ever think about the German innocence in March of 1945? Did we drop supplies into Tokyo after we burned it to the ground? We've never done this before. Hamas is an evil actor. They have to be defeated. And I believe in unconditional surrender when you've got evil actors who kill 1,200 people on a bright, sunny day at a music rave and an associated kibbutz. This is not someone with whom you negotiate. It's not Napoleon. It's not the Great League. It's evil.
Yeah, I couldn't believe in the State of the Union that President Biden put the quote-unquote priority of delivering humanitarian assistance on the same plane as defeating Hamas, as though those were equal objectives of the war. No, they're not equal objectives. The objective of the war is for Israel to win this defensive war. It is a defensive war that Israel's fighting. October 6th, there was a ceasefire. October 7th, the ceasefire was broken. Why was it broken? Because Hamas launched a war. What happens in war? There is violence. When there's violence in war, do innocent civilians get killed? Yes. In a war in which the enemy uses civilians as a shield and hides under 300 miles of tunnels underground while their civilians are above ground, are more civilians going to get killed? Yes. Does it create a disastrous humanitarian situation, a human catastrophe? Yes. Whose fault is that? Hamas. The pressure should be put on Hamas. The pressure should not be put on Israel.
The message that I would like to have given by the president, I want to hear how you would frame it. You're very good at messaging. We are 100% behind Israel. We will give them everything they need to wage a war that is far beyond anything required by the law of armed conflict. We praise Israel for their restraint. We will give them everything until Hamas is destroyed and Sinwar accepted or arrested, dead, or in exile. And that's our only message. And we're not going to change that message. And in public, across every platform, every Democrat ought to say that. That's unconditional surrender, Grant, and it works, Dan. Do you think the Democrats have thought about that?
I think some have. I think John Fetterman has. I think some other Democrats I know have. My friend Dave McCormick, who's running for the U.S. Senate in Pennsylvania against Bob Casey, I think to myself, if McCormick is in the Senate and Fetterman is in the Senate, you'll have the most pro-Israel duo, bipartisan duo, of any state in the U.S. Senate.
It'll be hard to match Maine. Model. Angus and Susan Collins are both very strong Israeli supporters. I think Maine's got the best Senate delegation right now.
That may be. But my only point is, I think that the position you just laid out, that this is Hamas's problem. Hamas created this mess, and only Hamas can end the mess. And the pressure's on Hamas. There's a human catastrophe in Gaza right now because of Hamas. And the Hamas is responsible for the massacre of Israeli civilians, and it is responsible for the deaths of Palestinian civilians. If you want to end civilian deaths, you need to pressure Hamas, full stop.
It was chilling.
President Biden or Chuck Schumer are saying anything otherwise. I mean, even in Schumer's speech, he listed out the obstacles to getting some kind of peace in the region. And he listed Hamas and Benjamin Netanyahu in the same, like as though they were of equal import. It was It was insane. Israel has a democracy. They're about a year and change into the first term, if you will, of this new parliament, this new government, this new Netanyahu-led government. What they won a decisive majority, this new government in Israel. So you don't like Netanyahu? So you just say, okay, now a senator from the Senate floor can announce, that country over there. Yeah. Oh, by the way, one of our most important allies.
Who would have had on their bingo card? Who would have said on 10-8 that the answer is regime change in Israel? Because that's what President Biden said. American Jews are afraid. And Haviv told me that during his tour campus at my alma mater, the demonstrators weren't aimed at him. They were aimed at making the American Jewish students at Harvard Law School auditorium afraid. They are winning in this regard in London, and they, by meaning the Hamas supporters, are winning in America. The president hasn't spoken out about this. This is shameful. How do you react? Not as an American Jew, but as an American, you know, whose friends are being threatened and our president doesn't say anything.
I think it's shameful. I think that where this is going, on my podcast, John Podhortz and I had a long conversation about 2 months ago called the End of a Jewish Golden Age, where we kind of laid out how we got to this moment where there's been this dramatic rise. You look at the FBI data, you look at the ADL data, you know, 300, 400, or 500%, depending on how you measure it, in terms of rise in anti-Semitic incidents since October 7th. You don't need the data to know it. You see it. I see it. I live it. I am very involved in organized Jewish life in the United States. My kids go to a Jewish day school. We're involved with our synagogue. You feel it everywhere. People are scared. And where this is going, as Haviv pointed out, where this is going is what they're trying to do is drive Jews underground. Because they're not just attacking people for their support of Israel. They're not just attacking Jews for their support of Israel. They're attacking Jews for being Jewish.
Yes.
When they're vandalizing and protesting in front of Starbucks stores. Why? Why are they protesting in front of Starbucks stores? Because the CEO of Starbucks is Howard Schultz. He's Jewish. I've never once heard Howard Schultz say a thing about Israel. But somehow they're attacking his stores. In Canada, my friend Heather Reisman, who's the CEO of Indigo Books, which is like the Barnes & Noble of Canada, she's Jewish. They, on the 85th anniversary of Kristallnacht last November, about four to six weeks after October 7th, they completely vandalized her store. They put posters up on the windows calling her chief genocide officer. Why? Because she's Jewish. This really is like what was happening in the 1920s and 1930s in Germany. I'm not saying that's where we're heading in terms of where that things went ultimately there. But
we're there. When Jews are afraid to wear their head coverings, and I never speak Hebrew and I never name anything because I get the pronunciation all wrong. When they're afraid to be Jews in public, we've crossed a red line in America that I am 68. I've never, ever imagined we would get to this place right now.
Yeah. So yes, I've never seen, by the way, I've consciously, you know, been very attached to and aware of and in touch with my Jewish identity for most of my life. I have never, Hugh, felt this sort of visceral. My mother's a Holocaust survivor, and when I was a kid, I remember her always, she was on the run as a kid, and so when I was a kid, I always remember her always being concerned and always having this, and I understood intellectually how she felt, but at an emotional and visceral level, I never felt what she felt, because where we live, everything was fine. This is different. This moment is very different.
Dan, we only have one carrier in the med. We started with two. Do you think Joe Biden has indicated to Hezbollah in Iran that we will, in fact, side with Israel if they force a war in the north? And they're going to. It looks to me like they're going to force Israel to do a conventional first strike, 1967 style, get in there and try and stop these very deadly rockets from hitting Dimona and many other places. Do you think America will come in, and is there reason for Sinwar in Iran to doubt that right now?
I don't know. I think the administration has done a very good job up to this point in terms of, I'm not up to this point, in the first few weeks, by deploying those assets. I think they sent a very strong message to Hezbollah. My concern is the Houthis have been unrestrained and undeterred. I'm trying to understand why. And I'm increasingly of the view that Iran believes it can use its proxies to attack the United States and Israel. And as long as the United States and Israel are responding by attacking or hitting Iran's proxies, everything's fine from Iran's perspective. The fear Iran has is if the U.S. or Israel starts hitting Iran back directly. So far, we have not seen that, or not that we know of. But as long as they can light up their proxies to hit the West, and the West responds by hitting the proxies, Iran doesn't care about what happens to these proxies, all is good in the world from Iran's perspective. So I don't think you can really shake things up, whether it's two carriers or one carrier. To me, it's less about the volume of what you have there than what's the strategy.
And well, let's go there, Dan. At some point. I think the CCP is our number one strategic threat, Russia number two for a variety of reasons. There are some second-tier threats like North Korea and Cuba and Venezuela. But Iran is run by theocratic fanatics, and Khamenei is 85, and he may want the hidden imam out of the well. And when I say that, I'm not joking. These are religious fanatics. Do you worry that Khamenei has decided, I'm going out pretty soon, and I'm taking Israel with me? Because it does seem to me that Americans don't understand Shia versus Sunni theology. And it's a big difference. Bernard Lewis used to stress this. It's a huge difference about end times and eschatology.
You know, I've gone back and forth on this. The difference between the threat that the U.S. and Israel face in Iran relative to the threat, say, from the Soviet Union is as much as the Soviet Union was an evil empire, it did not have this messianic viewpoint that it was willing to risk destroying itself in order to achieve its aims. And I can't say the same about Iran. And so that does make me nervous because I think Iran may not, be a rational actor. It's not so much that Khamenei is saying, I'm going to do this before I leave my perch. It could be that whether I'm in the seat or not, I'm willing to risk it all for this messianic dream of cleansing the Middle East and the Persian Gulf of Jews. And once you're willing to do that and risk the survival of your own regime, you're willing to do anything.
Habib stunned me because I didn't think anyone would be this inhumane, but I should have remembered Biafra and Nigeria. Sinwar doesn't mind if the Gazans starve. He does not he wants a mass starvation event. And if he drove this home and I hadn't thought about it.
It's an advantage. It's an advantage for Sinwar. Look, we did a Hugh, one of my podcast episodes was with a guy named Mati Friedman, mm-hmm. someone I highly recommend. He was a journalist for the AP, for the Associated Press, up until 2013, 2014. He covered Gaza for the Associated Press. He lives in Israel, grew up in Canada, made Aliyah, became a citizen of Israel, served in the Israeli army, fought in Lebanon. He then became a journalist, a very talented writer, covered Gaza. And what he learned is how Hamas completely manipulates the world, that Hamas can do whatever it does to Israel. Israel responds. And as long as Hamas can make sure that Palestinians, civilians get slaughtered in the crossfire of Israel's response, Hamas can tell the world, oh, look what Israel's doing. It's overreacting. It's not. Its response is not proportional. And then it unleashes the international forces, international diplomatic forces, really, to pressure Israel to pull back. And Israel pulls back, and Hamas gets away, therefore, with their initial strike. So we all said, me included, that on October 7th, Hamas has gone too far. This attack was way too ghoulish and unfathomable, and it won't be accepted. Talk about a red line. This will be the red line. They've gone too far. It's way too brazen. They filmed the whole thing. They telegraphed it to the, this is over the top. And it turns out what Mati Friedman argued on my podcast is, no, Hamas was right. They fooled the world again because the same thing is happening.
They have thus far, but I think the pushback is occurring in real time. Dan, this is our last segment for a while. I want to talk about the useful idiots in the American media. I have had to turn down two trips to Israel because they were one-week trips and I can't do a radio show. I got to find a place that will host me for 4 weeks and I'll broadcast from Israel every day and bring it because the American media is falling down.
You got to do that, Hugh. That would be amazing.
Yeah, I'll talk to you and Oren about it offline. I want to put the show there for a month.
We'll help you with that.
All right. So tell me something, though. Is anyone getting this right, in your view, in the American media? Let's also throw some roses as well as stones. But I don't have any roses no one is covering this the correct way. Except you. And Commentary Pod.
Commentary Pod is great. I'll tell you, Hugh, this is interesting. I was in London a couple months ago with Haviv. And I was meeting with I won't say who, but let's just say a senior diplomat from the Arab world, from the Persian Gulf, who happened to be in London when I was there and asked to meet. And he said to me, and he listens to the podcast regularly, to my podcast, to Call Me Back. And he said, and I was surprised by this. I was like, really? He wanted to meet based on some of the conversations of the podcast. So we had a nice long conversation. He's very supportive of normalization between Saudi Arabia and Israel, wants Israel fully integrated into the Middle East, has no patience for Hamas. And he said, I said, just out of curiosity, why do you listen to my podcast? He said, because it's the only way I can hear the conversation happening inside Israel.
Yes.
In other words, American press characterize what Israel's doing, but I don't get to hear these different voices, these different journalists, some center right, some from center left, whether it's Haviv who veers more right or someone like Benny Morris who or Nadav Ayel who veers more left or center left. He says, I don't get to hear all these voices inside Israel. He goes, I didn't realize there's this whole discussion inside Israel and this whole vibrant debate. And he goes, and I didn't realize, even though these people have such personal animus for their political leaders, and many of these political leaders have personal animus for one another, but there's such a strong consensus on the policy.
And that's why I didn't realize it. So what I'm trying to do, and Times of Israel, I also listened to Yossi and Daniel Hartman and the Hartman Institute. Here's where I want to close, Dan. You'll know the name Breckinridge Long. He was a State Department bureaucrat, third Assistant Secretary of State under Woodrow Wilson, Assistant Secretary of State under FDR in charge of visa. He kept hundreds of thousands of Jews out of America and sent them ultimately to their death in the Holocaust. And FDR didn't know what he was doing. I think the administration is full of anti-Israel people who don't think Hamas is evil. I have a hard time. I just think they're stupid. They're ignorant. I won't say stupid. They're ignorant of the reality of what's going on in Israel. Do you agree with me that there are Breckinridge Longs who are leaking and who are trying? Joe Biden not helping himself, but is there a Breckinridge Long problem going on here?
I think it's more of a problem among the junior and mid-level officials. I mean, it's so outrageous, Hugh. All these no-name mid-level officials in the administration sign or anonymously sign. I don't even know what that means. Anonymously sign a petition criticizing President Biden's policy on Israel. Who are these people, by the way? What? Like, I worked in government. You know, you don't like your boss's policy, you resign.
You quit.
And you're on with it. You work for them. He doesn't work for you. And you don't get to weigh in. You make your case internally. You make your case behind closed doors. If you don't like the ultimate policy, you leave. And that they want their jobs. It's also like a metaphor for this generation that's entitlement, that they get to criticize the boss publicly but keep their job. It's so crazy. I think his more senior level advisors, some of whom I know Jake Sullivan, I know Tony Blinken, I don't know Lloyd Austin, but I know Blinken and Sullivan. I don't think they are of the view that you're articulating. I think many of these advisors hate Netanyahu. They personally resent Netanyahu, and I think it's foolish. You can have disagreements or criticisms of Netanyahu, but again, as I said earlier, on the policy that matters, which is what Israel is going to do against Hamas, Netanyahu is representing where his country is at. and it is a broad consensus. So you can hate the man, but and go ahead and have at it. But don't do what Chuck Schumer did yesterday and say the man's got to go and hope that you're going to get a different policy.
Dan, we're going to disagree because I know they hate Netanyahu, but I think they are morally fuzzy. And I think the problem is postmodern America's inability to articulate that there is evil. There are only two problems in the world, evil and suffering. Suffering is not always accompanied by evil, but evil is always accompanied by suffering. I don't think they understand Sinwar. I really don't. Do you think they understand that a monster can be in charge of Gaza?
I think they understand Sinwar. I think they have this fantasy that it is easy to put in place a post-Sinwar Palestinian polity and society that is healthy after several generations of Palestinians being indoctrinated by Sinwar and his predecessors that the Jews can be driven out of the Middle East. I think that's the mistake.
But the first step is the complete and utter defeat of Hamas. If you want to turn it into a Superfund site and rebuild Gaza, and I want to do that, it could be Lebanon in 1950. It could be Beirut. But first,
but we can't do it alone. You have to defeat Hamas. You got to get rid of Sinwar and Dave and the others in the leadership, and then you got to say to the Palestinians, "Okay, guys, it takes two to tango. We can flood Gaza with money. We can say we're committed. If there's not, you have agency." To the Palestinian people, you have agency here. Who's going to step up and work with us in doing this? We cannot do this alone.
Okay, we've got 1 minute. I have not seen one leader. I know UAE is working, Saudi Arabia is working with us, and I know the Qataris are doing their job, which is they're obliged to do this, and they've threatened to throw Hamas out. The new government from the PA, any hope there, Dan? I don't follow it close enough. Anybody new? Anyone show up that you might have confidence in being a...
I think the PA is totally corrupt. By the way, most leaders in the Persian Gulf I talk to say the PA is totally corrupt. Abu Mazen needs to go. They still are. If you look at the textbooks in the schools in the West Bank, they are still celebrating the slaughtering of Jews.
You see, they need they need someone.
Still name streets after terrorists that kill Jews.
They need a McSisai, they need a Yoshida, they need an Adenauer, they need somebody. And you're saying there ain't anybody yet. Dan Senor, we are out of time.
If they are, they get driven out.
Or killed. I want to thank you. I want everyone who's listening to go right now over to Call Me Back. Just to Call Me Back, Dan Senor, S-E-N-O-R. Go get his two books, by the way, if you want to know what's going on in the ground in Israel. The Genius of Israel, The Surprising Resilience of a Divided Nation, as well as Startup Nation, along with his brother-in-law, Saul Singer. Great books. Dan Senor, you have been my tutor in this, and I appreciate your introducing me to people like Aviv and all the rest of the stars of Call Me Back Pod. If there are what podcast awards, the Oscar for Best Podcast in 2023 would go to Dan Senor. Thank you, Dan.
Thank you, sir. As always, appreciate it.
A great pleasure. Thanks for listening to the Town Hall Review. If you enjoy your podcast, take a moment, tell a friend to subscribe today. Send them to our website, townhallreview.com. I'm Hugh Hewitt. Thank you for joining us.
3-star general Michael J. Flynn, head of the Pentagon Intelligence Agency, knew all the government's dirty secrets.
He was one of the most respected generals in the military.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to. He understood its funding.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
The explosive new documentary, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, and covers the facts behind this scandal.
Flynn told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire.
I find out the worst enemy that I'm going to face in my life is right here in America. They took my assessment and they wanted me to change it. And I was like, I'm not changing it.
They had to get rid of Flynn.
With in-depth interviews, archival footage, and never-before-seen personal records of the man behind the headlines.
I just felt like I was drowning.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.